JC Corcoran Podcast. The light turned green, I pulled ahead. You crossed the street and I almost killed you dead. Thank God I quickly hit the brakes. I saved your life for heaven's sakes. Though any court of law would say I was not only right, I had the right of way. You turned my sunshine into rain when you lost your mind and went insane. Cause through my windshield I could tell you must have family in the depths of hell. Your eyes were wild, your teeth were bared. Anatomical references filled the air. And when you flipped me off, you brought a hardness to my world of soft. There's nothing I can say or do to make this wrong all right with you. So have a good life, then die. I hope it hurts so much it makes you cry. I hope it's torturous and slow. I hope you know you're gonna go. Have a good life and die. Have a good life and die. I hope it hurts so much it makes you cry. I hope it's torturous and slow. I hope you know you're gonna go. Have a good life and die.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest as jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did you hear him talking about it on the radio? Could your eyes believe the writing on the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Caller says possibly from inside.
There's been another deadly mass shooting in America.
We got an active shooter. We don't know what's going on.
Police say at least 8 people were shot and killed at a FedEx facility in Indianapolis. The suspected gunman killed himself.
He's on right here.
It is very heartbreaking. This is a sight that no one should ever have to see.
And with that, we are rolling with the J.C. Corcoran Podcast for the 16th of April, 2021. Yeah, this one broke overnight. 8 people dead, many more injured, and another one. So this is Friday, so this would be great to be arguing on social media all weekend about gun control and mass shootings, and there'll be lots of thoughts and prayers. Isn't it amazing now? It's like a couple of these a week. I don't know about you, but it's to the point with me where I just sort of look, acknowledge the story, make sure I have the facts straight as to what happened, just in case anybody asks me anything about it, and then I just move on. I just pick up where I left off, and I keep going. And the saddest part of the story is that there are people dead. The second saddest part of the story is that I think I'm becoming like more and more people around here where you just look, you acknowledge, you get the pieces of the story, and then you just pick up and move on. Those thoughts and prayers ready. All right, finally something to smile about with regard to our legislators. There's like 24 states that are fooling around with the idea of making daylight saving time permanent. Missouri, by the way, is one of them. I don't know about Illinois. I need to check on that. It's one of those things we've been doing for so long that I don't think the average person even knows why we're doing this anymore. Moving all of our clocks twice a year, we don't even really know why. And yeah, you can ask somebody and say, well, the farmers, and I was to conserve energy, and you don't even get the same story from the same person anymore. Nobody even knows why we're doing it anymore. So get rid of it. Every survey I've seen, I could probably just randomly pull one up. And it wouldn't even matter which one I did pull up because they're all the same. It's about 75% of people who are polled nationally say they're in favor of year-long daylight saving time. So let's review. The American people, most of them, the overwhelming majority, want it. The legislators apparently also want it. And of course, that's why it won't happen. Sorry to take a dim view, but we're not living in a functioning democracy anymore, so nothing makes any sense to me anymore. You know where it's cool to live in the summer, and in the summer only, by the way, and that is the extreme part of Western Michigan. You know, all along the coast, you know, places like Holland, even Grand Rapids, which is about 45 minutes inland, but all those places, New Buffalo, Ludington, all of those places. In the summer, the combination of being on the extreme, extreme western edge of the Eastern time zone and daylight saving time put together, the sun doesn't go down till like 9:45 at night. We used to vacation up there, and I lived in Grand Rapids for about a year. Felt a lot longer, by the way. They're a little behind there in Western Michigan. They're waiting for the new Farrah Fawcett hairdos to come into style. But that is one nice part about Western Michigan in the summer. All right, travelogue is over. What's next? Normally, I save celebrity birthdays for sort of like the tail end of the show, but I have a reason for doing them now. For example, birthdaying tomorrow, Rooney Mara. She was the girl in the Dragon Tattoo, 2018. She and her sister Kate are NFL royalty. Their dad's family, the Maras, own the New York Giants. Their mom's family, the Rooneys, own the Pittsburgh Steelers. Rooney and Kate are the great-granddaughters of New York Giants founder Tim Mara and Pittsburgh Steelers founder Art Rooney Sr. Anyhow, she turns 36. Jennifer Garner, 49. Kourtney Kardashian, 42. On Sunday, Conan O'Brien turns 58. Now, birthdaying yesterday, one of our old partners when we were at K-Hits 96 in St. Louis, and that is Jennifer Sparks, who celebrated birthday number 44. She's married, by the way, to the former Point radio personality, Woody. And they live in Southern California. Got a couple of kids now. And I distinctly remember the day I thought of this in the shower. I'm soaping up. I'm lathering up. I'm getting ready. It's like 4:15 in the morning. And all of a sudden, I just stopped. I was like, oh my God, I got the best bit I've ever thought of. Let's flash back to it.
And I have this idea. Jennifer Sparks, mm-hmm. Jen, buys the building next to Bar Italia. Jen, you buy
yes.
the building next to Bar Italia, and you open up a restaurant there, and the restaurant is called Jen? Genitalia. Oh! Fine Italian eating place. Yes.
So to speak.
Yes. And lessons.
That is nasty.
And that could be your slogan.
Come, definitely come.
Come as you are.
Come to genitalia.
Yeah.
It's all seafood.
Oh my God.
I would definitely eat at genitalia.
Oh my God. This is so wrong.
You can eat as much as you want and never get full.
Oh God.
Hey, they could serve Rocky Mountain oysters. They got tacos?
Oh my.
Italian.
Yeah, I guess they would have box lunches, huh?
I guess it gives new meaning to the word eating out, huh?
Can I come inside genitalia?
Hey, you know, you could decorate the interior to look like a community center, you know. So you would think you were eating at the Y?
Every item comes with a cream sauce.
Oh, damn it!
Do they deliver?
Do they deliver?
Hey, take home a snatch.
Wow.
Oh my God. Well, that turned ugly real quick.
And you had such a good intention when you brought it up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and thanks for including my name in that.
They have finger food.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Yeah, last time I ate there, I had a ball.
What did he say? Last time he ate there, he had a ball.
I'm sure there'd be plenty of liquor in their drinks.
Oh, God.
Liquor in the front, poker in the back.
Oh, my God.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was just thinking I wanted to set up a reservation for the genitalia. Oh,
yes.
I heard it was set up like an Irish pub.
Actually, it's not an Irish pub. It's an Irish pube.
Oh, that's right.
Is it true that genitalia is closed 1 week out of every month?
Oh, God!
Hey, at that restaurant, what was the name?
Genitalia.
Right. What's the spread like?
Oh, no!
Hey, isn't the bartender at genitalia? What's his name? Dick Benigna?
Hey, I thought the maitre d's name was Pat McGroin.
Yeah, I'm looking for an opening. Do you think the restaurant has a position for me?
Ty.
Yeah, I heard they had curb service, but only if you showed up in a Hummer.
Where the customer comes first.
No. You guys see the special there today?
What's that?
The fur burger, order a size, and a quick shake.
Oh, no.
Their slogan should be first served, first come.
The house dressing, vinegar, and water.
Oh, God.
But it's served fresh daily.
Well, they thought about having some musical entertainment on the weekends, uh-huh. And they said two nuts are trying to shove an organ in here.
Oh, my God.
Can always count on you sickos. All I have to do is go to the phones. Oh, man, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that a lot. Let's talk a little sports. Major League Baseball still fumbling around trying to figure out how to make the game more exciting. I think it's exciting enough. There are people that think that it has to be taken to the pace of college basketball or college football or something like that. Like if there's more than 10 seconds without something happening, then that's got to be right. We got to fill it with something. Got to play some nutty disco type music, have somebody scream, all that sort of stuff. It's like, for God's sakes, there's a ball game out there. If you knew anything about baseball, you wouldn't need all this stuff on the periphery to make it interesting. Learn something about the game. Instead of just, going to the ballpark and making that like a social destination. I mean, that's fine if you want to do that. Make it a social destination, but not at the expense of understanding what's going on out on the field. That's where the interesting part is. And they're trying to get the ball in play more often. And there's lots of legitimate ways to be able to do that. But now they're talking about moving the pitcher's mound back 1 foot. 1 foot. And they've been, prepping us for the last couple of years now about the DH. And this might be it. This might be the final year that you see pitchers hitting in the National League. You got to put that goddamn DH in, which, again, nobody wants. But they want it. They want the people who run baseball. Because I remember getting into a discussion, I think it was in the elevator at Busch Stadium, and it wasn't Bud Selig, but it was a guy standing next to him. As they're coming down the elevator, and I start giving him shit about the DH and the fact that we're in the National League and we don't want it. And, of course, their standard response is, well, we're looking for uniformity. At which point I said to him, if you want uniformity, get rid of the goddamn DH in the American League. And now you got your uniformity. And at that point they tackled me and sedated me. And I woke up the following Thursday on a park bench downtown. Let's give you the COVID update. This might be the weirdest product shortage of this whole era. There's a shortage of garden gnomes right now because of supply chain issues caused by the pandemic and also shipments getting delayed by that ship that got blocked in the Suez Canal. Who would have guessed that would have affected our stash of garden gnomes? A guy whose name is Dr. Snape led a COVID vaccine study at the University of Oxford in the UK, and everyone's making the connection between him and Professor Snape from Harry Potter. The university tweeted, quote, "Our Snape is not a dark arts professor. He mostly works in pediatrics and vaccinology. He's also a lot friendlier," end quote. A member of parliament in Canada was caught totally naked during a Zoom meeting on Wednesday. He said, "My video was accidentally turned on as I was changing after going for a jog," and then he apologized. Budweiser, the latest brand to give away free stuff to people for getting vaccinated. If you upload a selfie with your vaccination sticker or card to abeeronbud.com, they'll send you a $5 virtual debit card you can use to buy beer or anything else, I guess. Miller Lite isn't giving out free beer if you get vaccinated, but they did make a line of shirts with a sleeve missing you can wear when you get your shot. The shirts say almost Miller Time and cost $10, with the proceeds going to the U.S. Bartenders Guild. Some events are too big to get canceled even with a pandemic, like a festival in India where people get together every year to throw cow dung to celebrate the Lunar New Year. Thousands of people gathered for the event on Wednesday, right in the middle of the second wave in that country. And a 60-year-old guy in Norway who's big on conspiracy theories hosted two COVID denier events last month, and he just passed away from COVID. At least 12 other people at his events also caught the virus. I love a story with a happy ending. And I can't believe this actually worked. There's a guy in Taiwan who got married last year, and there are some local labor laws that gave him 8 paid days off from his bank job after getting married. But once those 8 days were over, he divorced the woman and married her again to get 8 more days. Then he did it again and again, and you got this figured out. The guy wound up taking off 32 out of 37 days thanks to his 4 marriages, all to the same woman. The bank where he worked caught on really quickly to what he was doing, and they told him they'd only pay him for the first 8 days. So he filed a complaint with the labor board, and the board actually took his side, and so did an appeals board. They both said that even though what he did was unethical, it was legal. The guy just found one hell of a loophole and took advantage of it. So the guy got his back pay, and the bank, by the way, got fined $700. Even if you're not a football fan, you've been dragged into this controversy with regard to the Washington football team. It used to be the Washington Redskins, and for reasons that should be obvious by now, they got to get rid of that name, and so they went without a name last year. The Washington football team is what they were called, and now the fans have been asked to help name the new Washington football team. Well, it's not a new team, but it might as well be at this point. So here are some of the choices. Jesus, there's 35 of them. All right, let me rip through these really quick. The Washington Aces, the First City Football Club, FCFC. The Washington Archers, the Washington Beacons, the Washington Belters, the Washington Red Tails, Razorbacks, Defenders, the Washington Football Team. Somebody suggested, I really like it the way it is. Let's just leave it what it is. The Washington Griffins, the Washington Warriors, the Armada, the Washington Rising, the Washington Swifts, the Washington Commanders, Pilots, Rubies, I don't even get that one, the Renegades, the DC Football Team, DCFC, the Washington Monarchs, Presidents, Wild Hogs, Washington Riders, the Washington Capital City Football Club, the Washington Red Wolves, the Washington Aviators, Wayfarers, I'm getting tired of this already, the Ambassadors, the 32FC, the Washington Guardians, the Washington Brigade, the Washington Demon Cats, the Washington Royals, Majors, Icons, and the Washington Anchors. Here's my problem with the whole thing. Everybody is focused on Washington, and there's only a certain number of ways that you can go once you start with Washington. But having lived there back in the early 1980s, having lived there, I used to work at Connecticut and M. We used to see Reagan go by all the time from my second floor window. And everybody there referred to it as the Capitol. And so I'm thinking, all right, So here is my completely unique and different name for this football team. Are you ready? Come on. You're ready? You think you're ready. You're not. The Capital Punishment. Oh, yeah? Well, then let's hear yours.
The A-List Interview with JC and the Morning Show, Graham.
Comedian Bob Saget.
You had 2 incredibly successful shows, which are now obviously in syndication. Pretty much you can either see Full House, America's Funniest Home Videos, pretty much anytime, anywhere, in any city in America. You don't need to work anymore, do you?
Well, of course I do. I have 3 daughters. I have a very happy ex-wife, and I pay my parents' cell phone bill. And now I've got a girlfriend who's 14, and I'm putting her through junior high. So that's
one of the great days in that studio. One of the great days. We'll talk a little bit about Rusty Young here. 75 years old, co-founder of Poco back in the day, living his life peacefully in Davisville, Missouri. But he checked out yesterday. I mean, you got to go all the way back to 67. He was with Buffalo Springfield playing that pedal steel. Runs into Jim Messina. They form Poco. 20 albums over the next four decades. Even Van Morrison came along and said, hey, that song you guys made in 79, Crazy Love, I'm going to cover that. That's a damn good song. They're going to do a memorial service in October in Steelville, Missouri. And speaking of bands that have a Missouri connection, go back to the late 60s, early 70s. You're talking Brewer and Shipley.
One toe over the line, sweet Jesus. One toe over the line.
I was on this radio station for the last 5 years that a lot of people in St. Louis had difficulty picking up because it was coming in from the south. But a couple of months ago, we did have a chance to talk to Michael Brewer of Brewer and Shipley. Michael, I'm going to go back to the late 1960s, early 1970s, and you're sort of knocking around Western Missouri. You and Tom are trying to get your music heard and your songs played on the radio. Tell me about what the music scene was like back in that time period.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, the late 60s, early 70s was arguably one of the best times in music in the world, I think. There was a whole lot going on. Times were changing, and folk singers had plugged in, and folk rock had been invented, and people were writing their own songs for a change. And it was, everything was popping. The Vietnam War was happening, and civil rights movements, and it was a wild and crazy time, but a lot of good music was being made.
So what about specifically in Western Missouri and around the Kansas City area, the clubs that you guys were playing and trying to get your songs heard? What was that like?
Oh, it was great. Actually, Tom and I got together in L.A., and actually we didn't even plan to be a duo. We were staff songwriters for A&M Records, which was a brand new label at the time, and we'd go into the studio and record demos on the songs for the record company to pitch to artists. And it didn't take long to realize that we kind of had our own sound, our own thing happening. And they said, well, why don't you record your own song? So we did. And that's how our first album, Down in L.A., came about. And just about the time we had an album, we were just fed up with living out there. And so we left, and we both were folk artists, solo, and we both had played a club called Guard Coffee House in Kansas City. And we already knew each other from the folk days. So we ended up moving to Kansas City and with some friends formed our own company called Good Karma Productions. No contracts or anything, you know, it was back in the hippie days. But anyway, we were playing the Vanguard and drawing a good crowd and playing just virtually every school that existed, colleges and high schools all over, not just the Kansas City area, but all over Missouri and all over the heartland, really, traveling around playing colleges and getting people turned on to our music. And it was just really a very fun time.
All right,
it was a magical time, actually, for us.
Yeah, so back in 70, 71 in that area, I was living in the Chicago area where I'm from, and this song comes on WLS, the Big 89, 50,000 watts all over the Midwest, called One Toke Over the Line. And
I've heard that song.
I know, and the thing is, I Googled that right before we started our interview today, and I learned something. It turns out that a toke is a puff from a marijuana cigarette.
Just, is that right?
Just exactly.
Who
would have guessed? Now, the reason I bring that up is because this was the ABC radio network. This was this was corporate stuff, and they were very, very conservative. And you guys must have crapped bricks when you found out that song got airplay on WLS and then spread all over the Midwest. I mean, you guys must have just scratched your heads and said, "We didn't really think this was going to happen."
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, WLS was the station, as you know, it's a huge station. They really helped break One Toke Over the Line. They had to make a decision. In fact, they had a special meeting with us to make sure we were going to follow through with it, not back out, if they, to back them up if they chose to go ahead and play it. And because WLS decided to go ahead and play it, many other radio stations did the same thing, because a lot of stations were afraid at the time the Nixon administration was coming down on so-called drug lyrics in rock and roll, but that also included Puff the Magic Dragon, for God's sake. Ridiculous. But, and of course, we made Nixon's enemies list, as a matter of fact, which we held as a badge of honor and still do to this day. But yeah, WLS was very instrumental in helping One Toke be as successful as it was. They were very brave, I have to say.
Now, Brewer and Shimpley is often thought of as sort of a Midwestern heartland kind of band, and that's not a knock at all. It's just the sort of music we like in the Midwest. But as you have traveled around the country and around the world, is there a place or a region where you sort of scratch your heads and go, how the hell did we get popular here?
Well, not really, because, you know, people are just people. Actually, I have to say the Deep South, back in those days anyway, was kind of surprising to us because of the music we were making and because of the way we looked at the time. You got to remember, man, it was like Easy Rider, living the Easy Rider deal. We kind of glowed in the dark. We just left L.A., so we were wearing bell-bottom pants and Nehru shirts and beads and things and long hair. So we had to pick and choose where we would stop to eat or get gas or try to check into a motel. We were turned away from a lot of places. So we were sort of living the Easy Rider story. But, yeah, the South was, in fact, don't want to die in Georgia.
Yeah.
We didn't want to die in Georgia. But anyway, I can't say that any place, really. You know, everywhere we were played, people seemed to like the music. In fact, I've had so many people over the years tell me in little towns all over the heartland that they felt like they were all alone, you know. Then they got turned on to our music, and they realized, wow, we're not alone after all. And that makes me feel good.
So you guys have opened for, or in one way or another, shared the stage with acts like Elton John and the Eagles and Springsteen and Billy Joel and the great Bonnie Raitt, ELO, Tall, Humble Pie, Ted Nugent. You've rubbed elbows with Dan Fogelberg, who actually worked on some songs with you. And I even saw Linda Ronstadt's name mentioned. Just talk about the collaborations and the input and maybe even a little criticism, maybe a little direction. Just sort of the experiences that you had with some of these incredibly popular acts.
We just, a lot of us just be at the right place at the right time. Actually, this is interesting, people don't know. Way back when, Bruce Springsteen, Linda Ronstadt, Billy Joel all opened for us.
Wow.
Before they hit it big.
Wow.
And we knew Linda, you know, way back in L.A. days when she was, you know, she had just shown up in L.A. and just trying to get something going like everybody else. There was a club called the Troubadour.
Oh, yeah.
And on Monday night, she'd pay your dollar. It was called Hootenanny Night. It's called Open Mic Night now. But anyway, back in those days, you pay your dollar. If you got to get up and play, then you got your dollar back at the end of the evening. And it would be Jackson Brown and Linda Ronstadt and people who would go on to be the Eagles and Poco and Arlo Guthrie, just, you know, the list would go on and on. It was just a whole lot of people, musicians, you know, just hungry and trying to get something going. And some of us did, and some of us didn't. Some of us more than others.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And you mentioned Dan Fogelberg. Yeah. Tom and I went our separate ways for a few years because we just got burnt out being on the road all the time. This is our 52nd anniversary, by the way. We've been doing it a long time.
Wow.
But anyway, I moved back to Oklahoma, where I'm from, to raise my kids. And anyway, I was doing some solo shows. I was playing a little bar in Nederland, Colorado, which isn't far from Caribou Ranch Studio, and where Fogelberg was recording. And he came in, and we'd never met. And anyway, he was working on his Innocent Age album, which ended up being a two-album release, and he asked me to sing a duet with him on a beautiful song called The Reach, which I did, and one thing led to another, and he ended up producing my first solo efforts, an LP called Beauty Lies. But it came out just about the time TV was happening, and radio stations across the country changed their format, and their logo became, "We are now playing what you see on MTV." And excuse me, and that's when music videos were starting to happen. So my Beauty Lies album kind of was a collector's item. It wasn't a planned collector's item, but it kind of ended up being one.
Yeah, yeah. It's like I've said this before, there are non-profit radio stations in existence. I've worked at a couple of them. They weren't intended to be nonprofit radio stations.
Yeah, exactly.
But they just turned out to be that way. You mentioned the split up between you and Tom. You have explained why, and I think everybody would understand that too. Just get burned out. What made you guys get back together? What happened? Was there a seminal moment?
Well, I never stopped making music. I did solo shows, and like I said, I ended up recording an album. And Tom had just gotten completely out of music. He had other things that he was interested in, and he got into videography, and he got really good at it. And he and his wife ended up making these great little documentaries about characters in the Ozarks where we live. And sometimes they would use our music for the background. And anyway, he was just ready to get back on stage, get back together with me, make some music. So he came to see me, and he says, "Man, I'd like to do some shows if you're up for it." And I said, "Well, sure." And just about that time, I'm trying to remember. Oh yeah, the Fox Radio in Kansas City had been there a year, and they were number one. And they just happened to contact us and asked if we would do a special concert in Kansas City to celebrate their first year anniversary and being number one. So we did. We put together a band, got some of our old band members together, and I'd put together a band too in Tulsa. So I rehearsed them, and then Tom met us in Kansas City, and we played Starlight Theater. Daredevils were on the show as well, and that's how we got back together. And then we just continued to do shows, and we're still doing it today.
I bet you right about that time, my buddy Randy Raley was hanging around Kansas City radio. I bet you know him, don't you?
The name's not ringing a bell.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, we'll take that out. No problem there. So you're sitting there one day, and somebody calls you up and says, "Hurry, hurry, turn on the TV," and you're watching this, and you're saying to yourself, "Honey, what were in those mushrooms that you put in the spaghetti?" I'm talking about the performance on Lawrence Welk of One Toke Over the Line. You're probably sitting there going, "I don't remember doing any drugs this morning, but man, oh man, something weird is happening."
Well, I'll tell you, Tom and I didn't even see it because we were in London at the time, and my mother was watching Lawrence Welk, and my brother Keith just happened to be walking by just about the time that they were introducing it, and Lawrence Welk referred to it as a modern-day spiritual, too. And of course, it's gospel to us. But anyway, we didn't even believe it. You got to be kidding me. In fact, my mom, I was told that my mom was going, "No, Lawrence, no, Lawrence."
That's your mom.
But anyway, yeah, 32 years later, we got our hands on a copy of it and put it on YouTube for the world to see. I think it's well over a million hits by now. But yeah, it's pretty funny. Pretty funny indeed. Never would have guessed that happening in a million years. Well, you know, in Ken Burns' documentary about country music, at the very end, they're talking about Mother Maybelle Carter loved the song too and wanted to record it. And one of her granddaughters had to say, "Grandma, you know, that's not a gospel song." Yes, I wish they hadn't told her. I would have loved to have had that as part of our credits. Mother Maybelle Carter doing One Toke Over the Line.
All right, the St. Clair County Event Center in Belleville, new concert facility, 800 people, all sorts of amenities, really cool place. Saturday, March 28th, you are on the bill with Soup Granda from the Ozark Mountain Daredevils, Jonathan Edwards and Brewer and Shipley. So people are going to come to the show. They know you're going to do your hit song. What else are you going to do? What can people expect from your performance and your part in that presentation?
Well, just a bunch of Brewer and Shipley songs. You know, we start at the beginning and go to the end. That's what we do. That's what we've been doing for 52 years. So, yeah, we'll just do a bunch of... We'll do pretty much everything we can remember, I'll put it that way.
And
we shared the stage with Jonathan. I've known Jonathan for a long time. And, of course, Soup from the Daredevils. Most people don't know this, but Tom and I were very instrumental in getting the Daredevils started in the business. There was a long 20-something song demo tape of the Daredevils going around Kansas City. People were taking turns listening to it and everything. And I mentioned our company, Good Karma Productions. I finally got my turn to listen to it, and I just about wore it out because I was so impressed with all the different writers and everything. So we went down. They were living at a place called Rudy Valley, over Missouri. So we went down and spent the weekend with them. And invited them to go on the road with us and as our opening act and to become Karma Productions. And long story short, they did. They ended up touring with us. We all became really, really good friends. And then they ended up getting a record deal with A&M Records, which we had just left. And then, you know, a few hits later, they're all over the charts. You know, they're doing great. Good guys.
And so there you go, Michael Brewer, a brewer in Chipley with some great old stories from the road. All right, that's it. We got to go. Please do everything you can to let all of your friends, do everything you can to let all of your friends and neighbors and relatives and all that sort of stuff, let everybody know that we're here doing this every day. Got to do word of mouth on this. Just tell them jcontheline.com every weekday morning, 7 o'clock, half hour, absolutely free. It's a pretty good deal. Most people like to cash in on that, so it's your job to let them know that we are here so that we can continue to do this. Have a great weekend. Follow me on Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran, and we'll talk to you bright and early, 7 o'clock on Monday morning. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.